Sergeant Hopkins, Paul Maynes, Technical Sergeant Harris, Merriman, Staff Sergeant Wright.
Sharing your right.
And Master Chief.
We'll rotate them one at a time.
Coast Guard.
President, first, gentlemen, here. President, how do you sit over here?
Just fine.
I'm a little nervous about it.
Don't be.
Well, it's, meeting the Commander in Chief is quite an honor, and I am.
Thank you.
Run with something for you from our commander, staff, and all this magazine.
Well, hey, thank you very much. It's on my boat. I know I'm not supposed to call a ship a boat. Boats have oars. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well. And I understand that there are a lot of, sorry that we have to do it by written answers to you, but we'll get them to you as soon as we can. And time just doesn't permit of doing all these interviews, but I would like to very much if we could have.
I told this morning to get a haircut before I sat down in the present, but I said he could.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I appreciate it too, and I don't know whether the questions will lead to this or not, but I hope that there'll be an opportunity in the answers for me to express how great a pride I have in all of you in uniform and all the services.
Thank you very much, sir.
I'm the only one here that didn't get time to have a haircut.
Last and most, sir. We're quite proud of the way we carried on the drug interdiction and providing leave for the DOD as well.
Oh, we appreciate the cooperation we're having in that. That's a, I think, an epidemic that has to be stamped out. So we'll keep that in mind.
Mr. President, if we could get one question. The group has elected the Army to ask it, and if you could answer one question for them, we'll complete the proceedings. Sergeant.
Mr. President, we understand that you served in the Army during World War II, and we were wondering if you see any fundamental difference between the military of today versus the military of World War II.
Well, I think it would be kind of hard because it was World War II and under wartime situation and draftees pouring in and all, and this is an entirely different circumstance, but I think I have seen a great difference now and over the last few years when there was justifiably a low morale, I think, in the way it was being handled. And today, my pride in this one, this all-volunteer military is all I think it's shared by most other Americans. Let me try, if I can, a little. Ways in those days, and as you know, we went from peacetime to war on a Sunday morning without much time in between, but something that always stuck with me and that has guided my thinking about the military today is that then as now, there were those in Washington who didn't think it was necessary to do anything for the military. And then they were having their way more than they are today. But we had held just in a few months prior to Pearl Harbor, the Louisiana maneuvers, they were the greatest war games, biggest war games we had ever held in our military. And many of the soldiers were carrying wooden guns, and they were using cardboard tanks to simulate armored warfare. And after the war, when some of our top officers were able to meet with some of theirs and talk about the war that they'd been fighting against each other, one of the questions was, why Pearl Harbor? And the Japanese answer was just what I've said about Louisiana. They said, why not Pearl Harbor? We didn't think you'd fight. And, but it was my first, I was a reserve officer. In those days, and after World War I and the years following, I don't think anyone ever thought there was going to be another war. We'd fought World War I to end all wars. And I was always crazy about horses, and I found myself a sports announcer in Des Moines, Iowa, where is also located Fort Des Moines, which in the war became the WAC headquarters, but then was the home of the 14th Cavalry. And I enlisted as a candidate for a commission. And by doing so, part of our training involved riding the cavalry horses at Fort Des Moines. And I got the commission, was called to active duty, was tagged limited service, because I wear cornea lenses. I'm pretty, very nearsighted without them. And the cavalry had no provision for limited service. They tagged me limited service when they examined me. And so I wound up at Fort Mason as a liaison officer loading convoys for, we were shipping everything we could, even just basic training, to Australia, because we believed that the enemy plan called for, they would have to pin down their flank before they could move east against us. So we were filling up Australia with American troops to complete their training there. And then the Air Force was the Army Air Corps at that time. And they created something comparable to the Signal Corps, because General Arnold was looking toward having a separate Air Force. And the next thing I knew, having been in that business, the picture business, I found myself shipped back down south in California to help organize and commission direct from civilian life technicians and so forth in the picture industry. And we trained all the combat camera crews and set up the training films and all of that. And I wound up flying a desk for the Air Force. It wasn't very heroic duty, but I never cracked up a desk.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Well, listen, I didn't mean to lecture you on old soldier stories here, but thank you all for coming.